of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We're going to take the first matter, Maggard, at our 1:30 docket, and then we'll take a very brief recess and change the roster a bit and come back and consider the second matter in the interest of AJL and QWJW, or QDJW, as our second matter on the docket. Your experienced counsel, I think you know the drill. We've read the briefs. At least one of us has been in the record. We're well aware of the facts in these cases. And if that helps speed your argument along, so be it. You can launch right into arguing the points of your case. You have 15 minutes aside. The yellow light will come on when 5 minutes are remaining for purposes of planning any kind of rebuttal. I would ask that everyone in attendance turn off any pagers or cellular telephones so that we are not interrupted or counsel aren't interrupted in their presentation to the court. And with that request, counsel, you may begin.
May it please the court, my name is Vonda Hall, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Norma Jean Maggard, and my registration number is 11842. This appeal is an appeal of the remand of this case, Maggard versus Department of Human Services, which was announced in August of last year. If you probably recall, in that case, you directed the State Personnel Board that if in the event it terminated the Ms. Maggard again, it was to make findings of fact and make and give reasons for its termination on the record. We are here today because the board did terminate Ms. Maggard a second time, and it did not give any reasons or rationale on the record. It simply voted 2-1 to terminate Ms. Maggard, and by operation of the statute, that constituted a termination. And if you also recall, this case, the ALJ, the administrative law judge, had determined that termination, excuse me, was too severe a sanction, and instead imposed a 30-day suspension. The issues we have today, whether the court, the State Personnel Board acted in a manner that was contrary to rule of law and arbitrary and capricious when it failed to follow the order of this court. And secondly, if the court does not find the grounds for reversal on its actions and disregarding the order of this court, whether the record supported the termination of Ms. Maggard or whether those actions of the board in terminating her were arbitrary, capricious, and contrary to rule of law. And looking at the first, and examining the first issue, the actions of the board in disregarding this court, we believe that that was the law of the case was clear. The law of the case said, if you terminate again, you are to provide reasons and rationale based upon the record for your termination. It failed to do so, and failing to do so, it acted contrary to rule of law. So that's our very simple argument. The second argument is we believe that the actions of the board were arbitrary and capricious and failing to follow the directions of this board, of the court.
What's the remedy for them, Ms. Hall? Should we send it back to them again and ask them, please make some findings?
I don't think that that would make any difference. I think that this court is in a very awkward position where there was total disregard of your order, and I think that that is contrary to rule of law, that it failed to follow the law of the case, and in doing so, it requires reversal of its order.
But what's the remedy?
The remedy is to reinstate the initial decision of the administrative law judge.
So that implicates the statute. In the first appeal, Ms. Maggard argued that that statute didn't apply, but the division held that it did apply.
That's correct.
In other words, that three votes were necessary.
That's correct.
To modify a decision of the appointing authority.
Yeah, and it's our position in making that decision that the court anticipated that this could occur, and it's still expected that findings of fact and rationale for the decision would be made. I'd like to talk a minute about the position that's taken by the agency, that because the termination was by operation of law, it implies that it was relieved of its obligation to follow this court's order. And I don't believe that that's accurate. I think that as long as there was one vote, and there was against accepting the decision of the administrative law judge, there had to be reasons, and those reasons should have been reflected on the record.
You're referring to the first vote where they didn't accept the administrative law judge's decision. We said there's one vote against that.
Right, and in this case, what they, what the was the, in this case, the motion was to accept the initial decision of the administrative law judge, including conclusion three, which is the operative conclusion regarding the suspension.
And the vote was 2-2, I understand.
2-2, that's correct. It was 2-1 in the first.
Right.
Right, but still by operation of law, they didn't have the necessary three votes to determine that it was arbitrary and capricious. But as long as there was persons voting against the termination, which there had to be, or else we wouldn't be here today, they had to have reasons, and those reasons should have been stated on the record. And we believe that the fact that they didn't showed a neglect and failure on their part to use reasonable diligence and looking at the record before it. And I'm citing from Lawley, who integrated the Vandegat case in its decision. It failed to give candid and honest consideration to the facts. If it had, it would have come up with a rational decision. You can't be honest and candid and still neglect to come up with the reasons to fulfill the order of this court. Finally, and this goes mostly to our second argument, we believe that in exercising its discretion, it reached a conclusion that was contrary to the what a reasonable person would find based upon the decision of the ALJ. And looking at issue two, I first would like to address an argument that the board raised in its brief. Basically, it said that the only standard that applies is contrary to rule of law, and this is an inaccurate statement of the law, and in this we rely upon the Ward case. The Ward case says 24-4-1067 applies, and that includes all the standards: contrary to rule of law, arbitrary and capricious, not supported on the record of a whole, abuse of discretion, acting outside of the authority, amongst others. And we believe that you need to apply the standards that are appropriate in this case, which are the arbitrary and capricious, contrary to rule of law, and not supported by the record. And doing so, I would just like to, this is a factual case, it turns out on its facts, remind this court that the hearing officer found that there were mitigating circumstances for the actions of Ms. Maggard, and that and the appointing authority was obligated to consider those mitigating circumstances. It failed to do so. It found, the ALJ found at least two of the witnesses to not be credible. The ALJ determined that the agency failed to collaborate some of the key elements in spite of the fact of that it had witnesses who could have done so, and it had the opportunity to rebut the position and the statements of the Ms. Maggard. Yet in spite of this, the board by its vote, ended up terminating Ms. Maggard, which is the most severe sanction in the system, and that we believe it was unwarranted by the record, and we ask you to reverse the decision of the board and reinstate Ms. Maggard. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, please.
All right, thank you, Ms. Hall.
May it please the court. My name is Roxanne Baca. I'm a senior assistant attorney general with the Office of the Attorney General, representing the State Personnel Board, bar number 23929. With me at the appellee's table is Joe Hockian, representing the Department of Human Services. And Mr. Hockian may reserve a couple of minutes at the end of the time, and I'll check with him when I've used about 12 minutes or so of my time. Also with me in the audience today is Kristen Rosansky, who's the director of the State Personnel Board. This case represents what might be called a perfect storm, a confluence of events making it impossible for the board to render a decision in this case. As you know, this panel of this court remanded the case back to the board with two directives. To reconsider its decision to reject conclusion 3 of the ALJ's decision, or to provide reasons based on the record if the board determines that termination of Maggard is warranted. The ALJ's conclusion of law 3, which is at issue here, stated that the discipline imposed was not within the range of reasonable alternatives. And based on that determination, the ALJ changed the appointing authority's sanction from termination to reinstatement with 30 days without pay. The ALJ's other conclusion of law that's relevant here is that the ALJ
The ALJ also had some conclusions about the facts, didn't he? About some things weren't proven and other things were mitigated.
And those were findings of fact. And what we're addressing here mainly are conclusions of law
that apply to those findings.
Conclusions
right. That would apply to those findings.
Right. But the ALJ did find that the appointing authority's action in disciplining the complainant was not arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to rule or law. And that plays a big part in what the board can do when it's reviewing the appointing authority's decision. Before I address the court's directive, I'd like to address for the court a couple of things that make this case and the State Personnel Board that combined in this case to make it a perfect storm.
So let me ask you a question before we go with the perfect storm analogy. When we considered this case the first time, we said we're troubled here. We really can't figure out the rationale for why this person should be dismissed or terminated. Now we've got the case back up again in a perfect storm context, the result of which I think you're about to say is, well, you've still got to terminate them regardless of any reasons. Is that correct?
Well, and I think the basis for that is because the board always has to consider section 24-50-103-6, which requires it when it reviews a appointing authority decision to have 3 votes to overturn that decision.
Regardless of how it gets here, how are we to determine that there's a reasonable basis for a termination when we have no reasons given as to why that discipline would be more appropriate than, say, a 30-day suspension?
Well, I think what the court can do is look to the Atkins decision, which was a case before this court in 1986 that said, which basically had the same facts here. The employee was terminated. The hearing officer thought that sanction was too extreme and, I believe, reinstated the employee. And this panel of this court said, based on a 2-2 tie, the standard of review in section 24-50-103 sub 6, which requires the board or only allows the board to overturn a decision of the appointing authority if it finds that the appointing authority's decision was arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to rule or law, and if that finding it cannot be made, then it has to uphold the appointing authority's decision, and the court stated that is an applicable standard of review for the board. So I realized the board, I mean, they tried. I mean, the first thing they did was they moved to adopt the ALJ's initial decision in its entirety when it met in December of 2008 to consider your remand. And Professor Carrata made a motion to adopt the ALJ's decision, and that motion failed due to a 2-2 tie. And in Atkins, the court said on a 2-2 tie like that, it doesn't reinstate the ALJ's decision. It affirms the appointing authority's decision. And so that's what, I mean, it's not pretty, but that's what we have here.
So we have a decision. We are able to review the agency's action for arbitrary and capriciousness, and we have an agency action without any reasons given for why it took that action. Doesn't that sound somewhat arbitrary and capricious?
Well, I think the other standard that the board is concerned about is that it would be contrary to law for it to hold otherwise. Now, back in March of 2007, when it first considered this matter, there were only three board members at the meeting. Two of them voted to overturn the ALJ, and they didn't need three votes to do that because they were affirming the appointing authority's decision. When they met again in December of 2008, only one board member remained from that panel. And it's hard to recreate that decision.
You're not saying that the 2007 decision was unreviewable by this court, are you?
No, not at all.
Well, if it was unreviewable by this court, you'd think that we are to have some power as to whether to affirm or reverse whatever occurred. So we asked the board in aid of our decision making to make some findings, and the board didn't do it.
Well, and I think what happened is because Professor Carrata made the original motion to affirm the ALJ's decision in its entirety and the vote tied 2-2, that Mr. Jokic, the only remaining member from 2007, realized that even if he delineated reasons to overturn the ALJ's third conclusion of law, it was still going to be a 2-2 tie.
What were the reasons for the first termination decision? Because I believe if you look at the board's order, they talked about having discussed the reasons for deciding that termination would be appropriate, and yet they never provided those reasons. Did anyone attempt to reconstruct the original reasons for termination?
Well, Your Honor, that's one of the things that the board is hindered in some respect, because they don't record their open meetings cases or their open meetings at all. They only record executive session. So we don't know what that discussion might have consisted of, and I wasn't the board counsel at that time. And you know, that's another thing that the board has to contend with. When they're tied 2-2, they don't, you know, they can't take a break and go back into chambers and maybe discuss the case and try to lobby the other board members, because they're governed by the open meetings law. They have to do all the discussion on the record.
So are you saying a decision that was reviewable in 2007 has, by virtue of the 2-2 tie, become unreviewable at this point?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the board did the best it could. It tried to uphold the ALJ's decision, and when that failed, I think Mr. Jokic, like I said, realized he wasn't going to get the three votes to overturn the ALJ's third conclusion of law. And basically what the board is stuck with is they have to apply Section 24-50-103 sub 6. And if they didn't, I'm sure we'd be here on appeal from the department saying the board didn't have the three votes to overturn the appointing authority's decision. So what do we do? I mean, I think that does put you in a tough position. I mean, does that mean you have to delineate the reasons? Can you go back and act as the reviewing board and delineate reasons why or why not the board's decision was correct or not? You know, I don't know. I think, like I mentioned, because we're in a perfect storm, we don't face this type of situation very often.
Ms. Baca, the original motion in 2006 was to adopt all the findings of the ALJ but reverse the conclusion 3. And when we remanded it in 2008, we directed the board to reconsider the decision regarding conclusion three. But as I read the minutes of 2008, it didn't reconsider conclusion three. The motion as described in the minutes says, a motion was made to uphold the initial decision in its entirety. So there doesn't appear that there was ever actually a discussion about conclusion three. It does say including conclusion three, but it wasn't specifically about conclusion three, i.e. termination versus some other discipline. So it doesn't even appear that there were deliberations on it, much less reasons given.
Well, and I think that the court's directive from your decision was in two parts, because it says reconsider the decision to reject conclusion three of the ALJ's determination, right, and provide reasons.
And if it upholds that, or if it continues to reject the conclusion, give reasons.
Right.
I don't see from the minutes of December of 08 where it even did the first step, where it actually considered conclusion three, where it considered should we terminate or should we give different suspension. The motion, as described in the minutes, or the order, excuse me, says uphold the decision in its entirety. So I'm not even sure where I see that the first part of our order was complied with, much less giving reasons.
Right.
I don't see where there was, can you show me where there's deliberation over conclusion three?
Well, I think what the board was attempting to do is they read that as a two-part directive by moving to adopt the ALJ's conclusion. So they were technically reconsidering its decision to reject conclusion of law three by moving to adopt it. And when that failed, they were at an impasse. They didn't have anywhere to go from there.
Well, they did. They considered it rejecting the entire, or accepting her entire thing, but that also failed for a second for some reason. I'm not sure what that was all about. The minutes say that they then moved to uphold the initial decision and hold that the entire termination was arbitrary and capricious, but there was no second for that motion.
Ms. Baca, couldn't the board here have given this back to the ALJ and asked for additional findings?
I mean, that's entirely possible. That's certainly a remedy. If the board doesn't believe that there's enough findings of fact in the record for it to make a decision, it could certainly remand it to the ALJ.
Well, I mean, that's another option that the board could have adopted here. You used the analogy of a perfect storm, and I think it was more like a very brief shower. I think the board could have done two things. One board member could have come up with some reasons based upon their review of the record and their review of the findings of the ALJ and asked to have those reasons adopted. Or they could have sent it back to the ALJ and said, look, we're at a loggerheads here, and we need to have additional findings, and so please take some more evidence and give us additional findings. They did neither. And what it looks like, and forgive me for saying this, but it looks as though they hid behind the statute. So maybe the statute needs fixing, and we can't fix the statute.
Right, and I mean, the board is governed by that statute. I mean, they have limited room to move when they don't have three votes. And I mean, all the suggestions that you put forward are probably things that they could have done. But, you know, I think when the board is considering these cases in the open meetings, and I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but they've got a lot of pressure on them. They've got, you know, this case they're trying to discuss in open meetings. They've got other cases. So it's not unusual for them to address six cases where they're trying to make decisions on, and you know, they're there for an hour or two, and they've got to make a decision before they get out of that room, and so, you know, it's not always pretty when they get out of there. So I've got about a minute and a half left, and Mr. Hockey,
Ms. Buck, are these open meetings recorded?
Open meetings, in the statute, if you recorded your open meetings at a certain point in time when that requirement went into effect, then you had to keep recording them, and the board has never recorded their open meetings.
When they discussed the range of reasonable alternatives back in 2006, according to their minutes, you can't reconstruct that because you have no record of what they discussed at the time, and some of the board members have left. Is that what you're saying?
Right, and if it's not in the minutes, then you know, it's pretty hard to reconstruct as far as what those reasons might have been. So, I mean, and again, you know, that's something else the board needs to consider as far as trying to get those reasons into the record or into its written decision. And I know because this case is on remand, that is certainly something that they will do in the future.
Or let me ask it another way. Given the fact that the ALJ had this whole proceeding, evidence, rulings, conclusions, basically what you're telling us is that it's meaningless because the board, by a vote of 2-2, and not having three votes, just blows off what the ALJ decides because it's different from what the appointing authority said. What was the whole point of it in the ALJ process?
Well, by statute, the board can appoint an ALJ to hear cases before it, any cases that the board has jurisdiction on.
And
it did. It did. And but the board still has that statutory requirement that it has to keep in the back of its mind that when the ALJ's decision is before it, even though it may consider the requirements in 24.4.105.15b standard of review, it still has to keep that standard of review in its organic statute, which is required by the APA in 24.4.107, which says, you know, the organic statute applies when there's a conflict in the statute.
Were there five members on the board in December of 08 when the remand was considered?
Yes, there were, and that's part of what contributed to the perfect storm. The fifth member was Robert Thompson, who had previously represented Ms. Maggard in this case, and so he was precluded from voting. And so that's part of what contributed to the perfect storm I was going to tell you all about. And with that, I'll conclude my argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baca. Ms. Hall, you have 6 minutes and 17 seconds.
Thank you. Well, it can't have been the perfect storm because it's a storm that happened twice in one case. And this is really an important issue because the board is attempting, by hiding behind the statute, I think is the word used, to evade review. And this is unfair to the employee who has a property interest in their profession. In spite of what the vote was, it rendered a decision. I mean, there's no way of getting around that. Its decision was that the employee was going to be terminated, and the employee is entitled under any circumstances and any votes to have a review of that decision. And I think that it's our position that this court needs to really look at the actions of the board in avoiding its duties and what the board was told to do. The decision of the ALJ is the decision of the board unless the board takes some action upon it. And in this case, the action was taken by operation of law. And we can't avoid that those were the facts that the ALJ found. And I have down here a lot of times, you just can't evade review under these circumstances.
Can you distinguish Atkins for us?
Oh yeah, that's what Atkins. In Atkins, the vote was similar, and that's what this court relied upon relied upon in its decision, holding that by operation of law that statute was constitutional. But what Atkins didn't have is it didn't have the problem that this court had. There were reasons. There had to be reasons in the decision upon which the board could rely in coming to that vote, and the court was able to determine from the record before it whether the decision of the board was reasonable or unreasonable. It can't do that in this case because based upon the record of the ALJ, which no one appealed any of the findings of the ALJ, the decision doesn't make sense. It isn't reasonable. And that's why this case is different than Atkins, where the record reflected a basis for the decision.
Well, the board, you don't dispute that the board has discretion to reject the conclusion of the ALJ.
No,
that's the appropriate discipline, but it has to give some reasons for why it's rejecting that conclusion.
As a matter of law, it has a right to reject the conclusions of the ALJ, but it can't do so by rejecting it. It's against the weight of the evidence.
And you're saying in the Adkins case, some reasons were discernible as to why they were rejecting
it. Why they were rejecting it. The court wasn't placed in the position that this court was in the initial case, where it couldn't discern why there was a vote for termination, what the reason, the rationale was. And there has to be a rationale. I would hate to think, and maybe this is naive, that the board goes in and votes willy-nilly on these cases. If you're voting, if you're voting for the termination of an employee, you have to have a rationale and you have to have a reason. Yes, the board has a number of cases, but it's mandated to consider those cases and rule on people's lives. And in this case, they failed to do so. Unless there's any further questions, we'll just simply ask that you would reverse the termination and reinstate the decision of the ALJ.
Thank you, Ms. Hall, and thank you again, Ms. Baca. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. We're going to take about a five-minute recess so that we can change the makeup of our panel, and then we will reconvene. And bail me in this brief recess.